This is the Mason Vera Payne Show, your go-to lifestyle program, covering everything from technology and gaming, to movies, TV shows, and pop culture, to the supernatural and beyond. Brought to you from Chicago, USA, with your host, the unabridged millennial, Mason Vera Payne.
Mason Payne here, live from the NVP studios in Chicago, and thank you for tuning in. During the heydays of cable TV came the bundle packages. And bundles consisted of you bundling cable, internet, and phone services for a discount. Even though people are cutting the cord, bundling still exists, and this time, it's with streaming services. Editor-in-Chief of Extremist Rob Toledo is going to join me to explain how bundling works with streaming services. Thanks for joining me, Rob.
Thanks for having me on.
All right, so I didn't know this. Netflix is doing like a bundling-type service, but with mobile phone providers. Why do you think Netflix is doing this?
Two reasons. One is, you know, literally everyone, you know, in the country has a mobile service provider. So it's going to give access, you know, to Netflix to have a basically a shot at a new customer base. I think it's also just, you know, good for the mobile service providers to kind of add these little incentives because, you know, can you tell the difference between any of them anymore? I don't know. So I think, you know, from Netflix perspective, though, specifically, I think they're kind of on the hunt for, you know, more and more customer growth. And I think if you can partner with the T-Mobile of the world, which I think is one of their biggest deals, you know, and T-Mobile has millions of customers and that immediately gives you millions of new customers, you know, it looks really good on your quarterly reporting if you have all these, you know, customers who have come in through a partnership like that.
Now, they're all about acquiring more subscribers, but you never hear about retention rate. Which is more important in your opinion?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. I think, you know, when it comes to big, flashy, exciting number that they can, you know, share on their quarterly reporting and, you know, directly tie back to how healthy the company is, it's like the overall growth is certainly the more exciting number. You know, I think they've reached somewhere like 140 million global subscribers, which is just insane. But, you know, at the end of the day, Netflix really cares certainly about, you know, the growth, but I think even more probably the retention, you know, because, you know, there's a cost of acquiring a new customer through advertising or through partnership. You know, I think the way Netflix thinks about what they do once they have somebody subscribed, it's, you know, they're such a data-heavy company that they're analyzing what we're watching and then, you know, producing that type of content so we'll keep watching, you know. Netflix said something interesting a little ways back that said one of their biggest competitors is Fortnite. I thought that was so funny because what they're implying is, you know, they want people watching Netflix. They don't want people playing Fortnite or doing something else, you know. And so I thought that was such an interesting concept in the way they're thinking about, you know, kind of the health of their businesses. You know, at this point, the competition is to keep eyeballs on your service. And I think that's what they've been thinking about heavily through. And that's where I think retention becomes a very important metric for them.
Netflix is like the leader of streaming services. Do you think other streaming places are going to end up doing the same thing, getting partnerships?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, and some of them already are. You know, I think Hulu partners with Spotify, for example. Like Spotify has like a student deal where it's like a cheap discount version of Spotify for students. And with that, you also can get a Hulu subscription at a discount. So, you know, I think more and more of these companies will start reaching out and partnering with, you know, big brands or brands that are kind of non-competitive, but there's some synergy there that they can, you know, work to cross-promote each other's services. And, you know, I think certainly you kind of always see it with, you know, the major cable companies. They always advertise, like, get 6 months free HBO, you know, and it's a great way for somebody to start to get signed up for HBO. And then if they're anything like me, they forget that they're signed up for HBO and they keep paying for it once the initial deal wears off and I just completely forget that I'm paying $15 a month and HBO gets a long-term customer because of that. So definitely a growing trend, and I don't see it slowing down anytime soon.
Now, when it comes to Netflix, everybody always talks about their subscribers, what Netflix is doing, and I know it's because they're one of the ones who did it first, but they're not the only, like, the only streaming services in town. There's also Hulu. How many subscribers does Hulu have?
Yeah, the last numbers that we had heard, and honestly, they were kind of surprising at how big it was. It was, I think, north of 28 million U.S. subscribers, and Hulu's basically only in the still a lot of opportunity for international growth down the road, but, you know, 28 million subscribers is a lot. You know, I mean, that is a ton of people who are actively using the service, and you know, it's been funny because I've always kind of viewed Hulu as kind of a secondary to Netflix. I don't know if that's going to be true. I mean, I'm not convinced that Hulu is going to catch Netflix's 150 million anytime soon, but like certainly that is a lot of people who have opted for at least, you know, a different streaming service than Netflix, if not, you know, just adding it to their existing streaming service options.
Now, I had Hulu for a while and I didn't like it too much. But for me, I'm kind of biased that Netflix was just superior in my mind. But why do other people also think like hey, Hulu is kind of garbage. I mean, what could be done for it to get better?
Netflix is certainly, of kind of the major streaming services, has the lead when it comes to original content. Hulu's had a few winners. You know, I think they did really well with The Handmaid's Tale, and there's a couple other shows that I think they're working on or have been recently been released that I've enjoyed. But, you know, Netflix is just producing so much original content. And so Netflix has an appeal if you have cable. You know, it's like there's still an appeal to go have a Netflix account because they're putting out so much content. Where Hulu, to me, fits into the marketplace currently is, A, I don't have cable and I don't need it, but I do want to watch some TV, and Hulu then kind of steps in and says, okay, well, we can provide you next-day television of most of the major networks, which I really enjoy. So for me, it's a cable replacement, less of an original content producer, whereas Netflix, I think, is like, Netflix has kind of become an HBO where it's, you know, they just produce content and, you know, you're kind of adding it to your existing entertainment options as a secondary service versus just eliminating your cable and replacing it with something like Hulu.
Now, it's funny. I don't even like watching TV, so I don't like Hulu even more.
And I think Hulu also gets a lot of flack because, you know, the trend in streaming is no commercials. And you know, Hulu launched with commercials. And you can pay a few extra dollars a month to get rid of them, which I do myself. And it's the best $4 I spend every month. You know, there's just like this perception of Hulu that's like, oh, they're the streaming service that has ads. You know, you go on the internet and everyone's like, oh yeah, you have to pay for their streaming service at $8 a month or whatever. And then you also still get commercials. Like, what is this? You know, that's not how Netflix or Amazon or HBO work. And, you know, with that in mind, I think they've kind of had a negative perception that they've had to fight back against. And again, I'm repeating myself, but to pay $4 a month to get rid of commercials, to me, it was just like, oh, that's a no brainer, which also makes me think like, is that all I'm worth to them? Is that all I'm worth to these advertisers is $4 a month? Well, that makes me feel terrible about myself. But, you know, at the same time, I'm happy to spend it if it means I don't have to watch ads during all my favorite shows.
Now, it turns out that Disney actually owns a big chunk of Hulu. Or do they own Hulu completely? I wasn't sure about that.
I don't know if the cap table is entirely out in the open. I am under the impression that Disney owns certainly the majority share. It used to be an even split between kind of three of the four major networks. It was Fox, NBC, Universal, and Disney ABC, kind of all owned, you know, 20 to 30%, kind of a varying amount. And then there was a bunch of other investors. Then Disney bought Fox, you know, and so all of a sudden now Disney owns 60% of Hulu or whatever, you know, something along those lines. And then just recently, I think it was like this last week or two, Hulu bought NBC Comcast out of their investing shares. And so now Disney, who is just about to launch their own streaming service, has purchased Hulu outright and essentially owns, you know, the controlling share of the company. Certainly there, I'm sure there's some other, like, you know, investors kind of underneath that control. But yeah, they it was quite the takeover. Yeah, they said, yep, we're going to take this entire company and run with it. And you know, from what I hear, they're not planning on changing much about it before launching Disney Plus. So I'm really curious to see how that works.
Do you think that Hulu and Disney Plus will have like a partnership and that way they can remain separate entities?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, if I'm guessing, Disney Plus is going to be very broad and probably family focused to some extent. And, you know, thinking about the Disney name on stuff. And I think if I, you know, again, I'm probably projecting here, but I'm imagining that the Disney services are going to be a little bit less risk, you know, they're going to be risk averse. Whereas I think Hulu might be the service where they can kind of dump a little bit more original content when it comes to, like, you know, adult themes or, you know, just kind of more controversial content. Like, Hulu might be the landing place for that in order to kind of keep Disney free of that stuff. But again, I don't know exactly what the plan is there, but it's going to be interesting to watch.
Oh, it would be, because if Disney does do that and decide to put all their best, like, adult stuff on Hulu, I may subscribe to Hulu just for that.
You know, Disney wants to protect its brand, and they're quite literally calling the streaming service Disney Plus, or at least that was the last official word. And so with that in mind, it's like, okay, like, let's say Disney Plus wants to put out something that's a little bit more aggressive or kind of like, you know, violent, or, you know, Disney essentially owns every entertainment company in the world, but they typically will, you know, they'll release things underneath subsidiaries to kind of keep the Disney name safe. And so I think it'll be interesting to see kind of how they're going to handle that with the streaming service. You know, maybe people don't care as much anymore, which is just one possibility. But yeah, it'll be interesting. I'm very fascinated to see how Disney plans on owning, you know, probably one of the second or third largest streaming services in Hulu. And then hopefully, in their mind, hopefully you know, launching and creating one of the world's biggest streaming services with Disney Plus, like how those two are going to play together.
Now, I saw a piece you guys did on Extremists that Netflix has saved children from 400 hours of commercials. Tell me more about that.
Yeah, we found this study done by a company, like a babysitter like referral website, and did a study that found some numbers that just blew us away. It was like they found the average number of hours kids watch TV between the ages of, like, I think it was like 2 and 6, and then like 7 and 11. And these kids are watching, you know, 4 to 5 hours of television a day, whereas in a Netflix only, so, you know, and basically if you do the math on how many in a given hour, there's about 25% of an hour is just commercials on television. So if you kind of extrapolate those numbers out across a year, kids in a Netflix only home where there's, you know, they basically don't see live television, you know, they're being saved from 400 hours of advertising. And thinking about my youth, you know, as a child of the 90s, growing up on Saturday morning cartoons and afternoon specials, you know, all the commercials, all the sugary cereals, all the toys that I didn't need, you know, like how many commercials I saw. And I'm like, whoa, that is a lot of time if you think about it. So it was really interesting numbers that we really enjoyed that.
Yeah, I'm thinking to myself, Christmas and summer had some of the best commercials because that's when all the toys came out.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, like, think of all the exciting, you know, the loud, bright color, flashy, you know, images that come across the screen between your favorite cartoons. And it's like, oh, my goodness, like, no wonder I was screaming at my mom to buy me that new toy.
You know, though, my father, he does that with me. He'll be like, hey, Mason, there's this new commercial. Did you see it? No, I'll tell my dad. No, I didn't. it's funny, though. Weird, right?
And I'm thinking about it from the perspective of, like, I hold a certain cynicism towards advertising now in my 30s, you know. I'm kind of curious if that came from being exposed to so many commercials at a young age and then realizing, you know, just how much garbage it was. I'm kind of curious if, like, you know, let's say we raise a generation of children who are never really around ads at a young age. They don't develop maybe like a healthy level of skepticism, you know, like, okay, what's this thing trying to sell me, you know, and then they go into adult life. Maybe they become more susceptible to ads. I don't know. It'll be interesting to kind of follow that.
Oh, yeah, you're right. What about brand loyalty? Like, people always saying Kleenex when they really mean tissue, right? So
Kleenex, Q-tip, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly. So now these kids are walking around saying, can I get some tissue? And they're never going to know that Kleenex is the superior brand.
Exactly.
So for this month, are there any shows that you've been watching in particular?
I'm going to confess to my love of watching dark television, but I really like that Zac Efron show about Ted Bundy. I think it's called, like, Extremely Vile and Violent or something, but it was really entertaining. It was, like, from the perspective of his girlfriend when Ted Bundy was doing all of his killings. This was really interesting. Hulu just put out a new original miniseries called Catch 22, and it's based on the Joseph Heller novel. It was produced by George Clooney, so it's kind of a big name production for him. And it's very funny, a little dark and a little slower, but I enjoyed it. And then on the HBO side, HBO Now or whatever their streaming service is called, they have this miniseries called Chernobyl, and I was convinced I was going to be canceling HBO after the Game of Thrones finale, but then this show has kept me hooked. So. I think if I can recommend any show this month, I would check that one out for sure.
It's funny. I found out that YouTube has free movies. And since I have ad blocker, I just watch them all the way through. And I've been watching Legally Blonde like 5 or 6 times a week. It's horrible.
That's great. I know, because YouTube actually has quite a few free movies on it.
Yeah, I was shocked. My niece came over and she wanted to watch a cartoon, and I don't have any cartoons and my DVD wasn't set up, so I couldn't really play anything for her. So I was just going to find like a show on YouTube. And then I was like, oh, YouTube has free movies. And I think it was Igor was on, and I was like, I just put it on for her, and she was hooked. But I was like, oh my God, they have free movies. I didn't even know.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, a lot of them are just stuff with advertisements, but like you said, with an ad blocker or something, it's pretty easy to get around that.
I don't think they thought that through. I'm just saying.
I know. I'm sure they're gonna figure that out at some point. You know, I don't know if you've like gone and read like a news article on a site that has like software to detect it, but they like, you're running an ad blocker. Like, you can't read this article. I'm like, what?
There's ways around that too.
Yeah. Oh yeah, of course. It's always a cat and mouse game. Sure.
Isn't it? It is. And I find it to be fun personally. I don't know why, but I get great enjoyment out of it.
Yeah.
Are there any other shows that we should be on the lookout for in upcoming months?
Yeah, I mean, this month I think we're going to see the final season of Jessica Jones, which will be interesting. And I'm thinking of this mostly from the perspective on Netflix. I think this is the last kind of last remnant of that, you know, Marvel Netflix deal that kind of, you know, I think had everyone's hopes up, and then it just kind of slowly fell apart. Anyways, I'm still curious to see how they wrap it up. And then there's a season 5 of the show that I like. It's kind of a miniseries released every couple of years called Black Mirror. A new season of those coming out on Netflix. I'm excited for both of those.
Did you see the trailer for What If? That was weird.
Yeah. Netflix is not afraid to go some goofy directions, some experimental content. I saw the trailer. I haven't watched the show yet, though.
Yeah, I saw the trailer too, and I didn't know what they were doing. Because is it going to be a little like stories intertwined and how they come together, or are they little blurbs like Black Mirror? But I like Renee Zellweger is in it, so that should be interesting to say the least.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, Rob, thanks so much for joining me. I really appreciate you being here. For those listening, where can they find more information about you?
Yeah, check us out at extremist.com. Hopefully we'll have the latest news on your favorite streaming service.
This has been the Mason Vera Payne Show. Thanks for listening. Can't wait to hear more? Head to WGNradio.com for exclusive content by Mason. Also, follow Mason on Facebook and Twitter @MasonVeraPayne, that's all one word, and don't forget to share the show with your friends.